Welcome, welcome to a very special First to Know program. I am Paul Crouch Jr., your host, and it is my honor and my pleasure to have someone that I've spoken to a couple times, but two-time heavyweight champion, George Foreman. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Happy to be with you again.
Oh, this is such an honor and such a pleasure, and we're going to kind of get back and talk a little bit about how you came to the Lord, a little bit of your story, and obviously George also has a new book. It has got a great title, Going the Extra Smile. But, you know, I was looking at your bio card here, and it was so interesting to me because the first thing they put on here was not the fact that you won a gold medal in the Olympics in 68, but that you are the pastor of the Lord Jesus Christ in Houston for 27 years.
Yeah. Well, it's over 30 now.
30 years? Well, this is an old card.
Well, I'll take 27. That makes me younger.
Tell me about that. I mean, being a pastor, that is so interesting to me.
Oh, it means work because people depend on you for answers. Mm-hmm. And you pretty much got to dedicate your whole life to helping people with their problems.
Yeah.
Understanding that they got questions. They want them to come from above, the answers.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy task.
But it's something you enjoy.
I love it. The best thing to ever happen to me in my life.
Yeah, interesting. Take me back. You're a kid growing up. How did you get into boxing?
Well, it was strange. I joined the Job Corps back in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. And I really went to get a basic education. And in the evening, because of homesickness and all of that, and I'm a bully too, some kids challenged me. Why don't you be a boxer? You think you're so tough?
Mm-hmm.
And I took them up on it. I was going to go down to the gym, learn how to box, become a greater street fighter, take it back to Houston. I was in a place, Pleasanton, California.
Yeah.
And finally, Doc Broders convinced me, the boxing coach, that I could really be good at it. And it happened so quick. February of 67, I tried it the first time. October of 68, I was a gold medalist. It happened real quick to me.
That quick. Tell me about your family upbringing. Were you raised in a Christian home? I mean, were you around a faith element at all?
Not very much. Just worked one job after another. She'd always stop and tell me when I was in trouble, read the Bible, George, stay out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Go to church. But she didn't have time to really enforce it. Sundays meant a day maybe to get an extra job.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have a chance to really grow up with someone telling me the goodness of God.
Father?
Well, my mom and dad broke up pretty early.
Yeah.
My dad gave me the gift because whenever he'd have a few too many, he would touch my head and say, George Foreman, the next heavyweight champ of the world.
Really?
I didn't have any idea what that was. But he always believed in me for that area.
Did the breakup, did it affect you? I mean,
no doubt about it, because when you break up early, your parents break up and your mom is trying to be father and mother.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to scare me. And I was telling my friends in church one day, I broke out of the door. My mother tried to stop me and I bumped her with my shoulder and she fell.
Mm-hmm.
She said, son, I can't do it anymore. I'm just going to have to turn you over to God. God is going to have to grow you up now, make a man out of you. And I'll never forget that, because I had no idea what she was saying, but I wish she hadn't given up on me, because God became a taskmaster, and he made it rough on me. But it was really rough for my mother, and I was out at night prowling when she was at work and getting in trouble, so life was rough for me.
Getting in trouble, take me back there a little bit. What were you doing? What were you searching for?
Well, the strange thing, I was pretty fairly, my mother would scare me pretty good, but my mother took sick. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when I was a little boy, she was taken away because of tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
Taken away from home, and I didn't have anyone to scare me or tell me when to come in and when to go out.
Yeah.
That was a defining moment of me. The next thing you know, I was out on the street, a mugger, robbing and stealing, all the things my mother had told me never to do.
Yeah.
That's what life became. And it didn't stop. I was one day running from the police, crawled under a house to get away from the dogs and the police.
Yeah.
And that's when my life changed. I remember watching movies where the crooks were pursued by police. And when they couldn't find them, they sent the dogs to sniff them out. And in my neighborhood, they had these dogs. I was so afraid the dogs were going to get me, so I remember the crooks going into the water to to get the scent.
That's right.
And change. So I figured I saw a busted sewage pipe.
Yeah.
And I covered myself with sewage that night so the dogs wouldn't smell me. And it was the first time I realized that I was a criminal, a crook.
Yeah, and that you were lost.
And I said, you know, I'll never steal again. I got to do something with my life. Mm-hmm. My mother had raised me better than that. And that's when I found the Job Corps.
Okay. And then later, boxing. Tell me about what it's like standing on that Olympic platform and hearing the national anthem being played with the gold medal around your neck.
Yeah, and I love telling that story because once when I was making truants, shooting hooky from school, a cousin caught me and said, you know, go to sleep. You're never going to be anything. And I said, what? She said, no one in this family ever become anything. That's true. And I was maybe a 14-year-old boy to be written off so soon.
Yeah.
Now in Mexico City, I'm on that platform. They put the gold medal around your neck and you hear the national anthem in the background. And I remember saying to my cousin in my mind, I must be an American. Why else would they be playing that song? She said I would never become anything.
Yeah.
Years later, she told me, boy, I always told you you were going to be something.
<That's right>.
But yeah. that was the most wonderful feeling that one could ever have, to represent your country and to hear that national anthem on the background, a gold medalist.
Oh,
I was a 19-year-old boy who had never had a dream to come true.
Yeah. How did then you win the gold medal, and then I'm sure you then transitioned immediately, what, into professional boxing?
Yeah, it was time to go to professional. I didn't want to be a professional boxer. I had a good job, and I was supposed to go to pursue college so I could work as a counselor for the Job Corps and help kids with athletics. But everybody said, you can be champion of the world now, George.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out to train and started working out. I got a professional trainer, Dick Sadler. Mm-hmm. One fight after another, I became pretty good at knockouts because no one believed I was tough. I only had a total of 25 boxing matches as an amateur, so no one expected much of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this punch. Whenever things would get rough, I'd close my eyes. I'd wake up and they'd be on the floor.
Yeah. The iron fist. Yeah.
So that's how I did. So I was a number one contender within 3 years.
Wow. Now, again, tell me about your faith. You've had some success. You won the gold medal. Was God still kind of tugging at your heart at that point?
It's so strange because I associated with God and religion with really poor. My mom was so poor, and she'd always come home and say, son, you got to watch out. Be a good boy. Say your prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And sad songs. She'd hum a sad song. So I figured I'm going to become wealthy and rich so my mom would never sing those old sad songs in religion. I'm not going to talk religion. Broken people do that. Right. Whenever there was a guy who had gone to jail or had gotten in trouble, he'd come back with a Bible. Not me. So I didn't have any confidence in religion at all.
Hmm.
I really didn't.
And you equated it kind of like you said with being poor and
weak.
And sad and interesting.
Broken.
Tell me about Ali.
Oh, now, remember, I'm at this point, I've had 47, no less than 47 boxing matches,
mm-hmm.
and maybe all of them were knockouts in the first and second round. Nobody could stand up to me, and I'd even defeated Joe Frazier, who had beaten Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
So this was supposed to be my easiest fight ever.
Mm-hmm.
He's older. Everybody said, don't kill him, George, because I said, I'm going to maim him. This was supposed to be my most easy fight, so I'm in Africa.
Yeah.
And beat him up for first, second, third round. He hit me, of course. But then after about the sixth or seventh round, I hit him as hard as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And he fell on me, and I thought he was going to fall. And he fell on me and whispered, that all you got, George? That was terrible.
Did that scare you?
Because that was all I had.
Yeah.
That was the end of George Foreman. And in the eighth round, for the first time, there I was on the canvas listening to the referee count. One, two, the harsh moment for me. When I jumped up, the fight was over.
Yeah.
I'd been counted out, and I thought I'd lost the most important thing that ever happened to me, heavyweight championship of the world. One day, everybody's patting me on the back. Easy, great.
Yeah.
The next day, they're pitting you on the back. It's pity.
Hmm.
Most devastating moment as an athlete for me.
Did you think your career was over at that point, or what was going through your mind?
I was just devastated. I lost everything I'd ever worked for. I was mad.
Yeah.
First of all, I had a lot of hate because there were so many people who supposedly were my friends.
Mm.
All of a sudden, they stepped back. The media said write horrible things. I said, I'm going to get revenge.
Yeah.
For the first time, I added hate along with this total brute strength.
Mm-hmm.
I hated Muhammad Ali. I hated boxers. I was going to be heavyweight champ of the world again, and I was going to do it. That was the most important thing. That's all I had to do in my life.
And, you know, I watched you in some of those early fights, and that hate really motivated you. It came out of your persona.
Yeah, I'd go in the corner, and you sit there, and even the trainer say, this guy's this, this guy's that. And you no longer look at human being boxers, these fellas, as human beings. It's like you're going deer hunting or something.
Yeah.
And then I'm just look really fatally through them.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, obviously, at that point, too, you're probably making a dollar or two.
Oh,
and
yes.
The lure of the world. And what the world has to offer. Tell me about that.
Oh, so many millions. Can you imagine, the first time I made my first $1 million purse, everybody told me, $1 million purse, and I thought, I kept waiting. It's going to happen. I'm
going
to have
it made. Now, is that $1 million in a purse and they hand it to you, or is that how they,
well,
that's
the
not
purse
how they
was
do it?
The amount you fight yeah. for, but in the bank, and you kept thinking this joy, and this wonderful feeling is going to happen to you. My whole life is going to change because I'm a millionaire.
Right.
I kept waiting for that.
Did it come?
Never came.
Mm.
I had the million. Of course, I could go buy cars, the fleets of cars and homes and jewelry. I had all of that. But I kept, you're going to have it made. I yeah. never found that with $1 million.
With what the world has to offer.
Interesting. That's what the world had to offer. It's all. That's all.
And it's empty.
Too empty.
Yeah.
I remember one year in the 70s, of course, I got frustrated and depressed because I couldn't find anything else to buy.
Mm.
Not because I didn't have the money. I just couldn't find anything else to buy. Hoping that this money was going to give me my joy.
Yeah. Well, I know from our other conversation, there was a fight with not a very well-known fighter even today or even at the time, Jimmy Young.
Jimmy Young, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Tell me about that.
Well, this is my, now I've made it back to be number one contender in the world. I've lost the title to Muhammad, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can stop me. If I win this boxing match, if he doesn't face the challenge Muhammad Ali doesn't, they're going to crown me champion. All I got to do is go out there and win this fight. And I thought I'm going to go 12 rounds to show the world how strong I am.
Mm-hmm.
12 round, fight was over, a decision. They gave it to Jimmy Young. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hurt, nor was he hurt. I figured, well, doesn't mean anything. I had money and wealth and all of that. And I went back to the dressing room to cool off and said those same things in my mind again. You don't need that boxing match. Still George Foreman. You can retire right now
right.
to your ranch and die.
Hmm.
I never heard that before. That just took over my conversation. You're going to die. And I'd heard about athletes dying.
Mm-hmm.
I just never thought it was going to happen to me.
Yeah.
Not
this
me.
This is happening in the dressing room.
In the dressing room now, I got about 8-9 people in the room. They're looking at me, but you don't want to say to them, I'm thinking this. They're going to think you're depressed or you feel bad about a boxing match.
Yeah.
I was fighting for my life in a dirty old stinky dressing room. The air conditioning had gone out. And so as I'm walking back and forward thinking, you don't worry about that. Death. I still got money. I can go to my ranch now. I got cars, money in a safety deposit box. You can just go home. You can retire. Who cares about and die?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't shake it.
Mm-hmm.
An athlete like me, all the muscles I'd taken, I'm fighting for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really got scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't tell anyone in the dressing room. And just as I was walking, I heard a voice within me say, you believe in God. Why are you scared to die?
Mm-hmm.
I said, everybody believes in God. I mean, who made the birds and all the... That's what I believed in.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe in religion.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't believe in all of that.
That's good.
Going to church, that didn't mean anything to me. So I realized I was about to die, mm-hmm. and that voice wasn't anyone. So I said, look, I can still box.
Right.
Within my thoughts back, I can still box and give money to charity for charity and for cancer. And the voice answered me back, I don't want your money. I want you.
Wow.
Then I knew it wasn't a voice out of the wild hole because no one turned down money.
That's right.
I never heard anyone turn down money.
Yeah.
I got scared and scared. Finally, I realized I was about to die. And I finally just got brave. I said, I'm fixing to die. Tell everybody. But before I know it, my leg giving out first. And I just couldn't hold it. I said, y'all, I'm fixing to. Before I could say another word, it was like I was gone. In that dressing room in a split second, I was in this deep, dark place. Over my head, under my feet, all around me was nothing. And I tell people, if you multiply every sad thought you've ever had in your life, it wouldn't come close to what I felt. It was like nothing, emptiness.
Yeah.
And I looked back for a second behind me, and I saw everything I'd ever worked for, my real estate investment. I had money in a safety deposit box. I'd hidden this from wives.
You know, right.
I had all kind of things, secret money, and it just crumbled like ashes. If you stick a match to a piece of paper in the stands, it touch and crumbles.
Yeah.
Everything crumbled behind me, and I'd fallen for nothing. There I was in this dog place, dead. And
George,
the only thing that bothered me, I just hadn't said goodbye to my mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
My mother just loved me, and she had done so much, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to my mother, my children. So I got mad. I said, I don't care if this is death. I still believe there's a God. And I just thought that was it. When I said that, it was like a gigantic hand reached in and pulled me out of nothingness.
Wow.
And I was alive in that dressing room. And first thing you remember, because you feel blood flowing through you.
Yeah.
So evidently they picked me off the floor and laid me on a table. My doctor was standing behind me, Dr. West, who traveled with me.
Yeah.
I said, move your hand, doc, because the thorns on his head are making him bleed. And I hadn't been cut from the boxing match, and I saw blood coming down my forehead. He looked and smiled, and my masseur, Mr. Fuller, I said, move your hand, Mr. Fuller. He's bleeding where they crucified him. And I, Jesus Christ is coming alive in me. I jumped off the table, started reciting the Bible, jumped in the shower and cleaned myself. Hallelujah, I'm clean. I've been born again. I never said words like these.
Oh, my word.
And I said, let me go. They said, George, you got to put on some clothes.
Yeah, you can't run out naked.
You can't run out like that.
Yeah.
But I fought and I fought and I fought to tell everybody. I kissed everybody in the room, told them I loved them. They were my brothers. No one had ever heard me speak like that, but my life changed. Of course, they strapped me down.
Yeah.
Took me in a bed and took me out to intensive.
Some of these guys thought you'd lost it, hadn't
they? Yeah. But I felt so good for that moment. I heard this voice as I was laying down. I said, don't let Jesus go. I come to my brothers. They don't believe me. I come to my friends. They don't understand me. Don't let Jesus go. It's either way, one or the other. I come to my brothers and they don't believe me. And now I go to my Father, which is in heaven. And it was over. For a moment. You know what I told you when I got that $1 million I was supposed to feel?
Yeah.
That's the way I felt.
Yeah.
I was really there. Mm. I said, then it was off me and I felt just the same guy again.
Yeah.
I said, you witness a miracle and you won't even believe it.
Unbelievable.
And they shipped me out of there.
Yeah.
But for 10 years, I didn't even make a fist. I didn't box. I didn't do anything.
And you didn't box after that?
No.
Literally for 10 years.
10 years.
But you did go back into the ring eventually.
I did.
Tell me about that.
Well, I started working for the, these kids were getting in the street corner. They wouldn't, I'd preach on the street corners, but they wouldn't come to church.
Mm-hmm.
And some kids kept getting in trouble, going to prison. I decided, my brother Roy and I were gonna start a youth center, George Foreman Youth and Community Center. Took all the money I had from my boxing days to start this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very expensive venture to get a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I just ran out of money. I didn't know what to do. I went home and told my wife I'm broke. And she walked past me. She was pregnant. I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm pregnant. I said, what? I said, do you realize I'm broke?
Yeah.
She said, you better go get something.
Yeah, go earn a living.
So I went out to earn money. Then one day I decided in a church to say, you know, I know how to get money for my youth center. I'm going to be heavyweight champ of the world again. After 10 years, 315 pounds,
yeah.
I started working out again. And got myself back into a major contention ship.
That's amazing. Who did you actually fight to win the second time?
The second time around, it would be actually 20 years to the date that I would fight Michael Moore for the heavyweight title.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 45-year-old man, and I think he's about a 25-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And everybody was saying, he's going to kill you. You're going to get knocked out. You shouldn't do it. You're too old. I heard all of that.
Yeah.
But then I had said my prayers.
Oh. Amazing. Now, obviously, after your conversion, and that truly is one of the most amazing, I've heard them all, but that's one of the most amazing conversion stories. How did you get into pastoring? Because that's a whole nother leap in and of itself.
When I left boxing, I was afraid of this story at first. I wasn't going to tell anybody this because I'd made fun of religious people, you know.
Right.
I had girlfriends. We'd make joke about it.
Yeah.
And so finally, I had a friend, Dr. Robert Shuler, and I called him up. because he had invited me to church. Muhammad Ali had his group, so I'm going to get me a group of people. So I played that thinking I'd get a crowd, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, man, something happened to him. And I gave him the story of my experience. I said, it really happened. He said, George, I really believe you. Come down and tell it to my congregation.
Yeah.
And he did. And I went down. I thought that would be the last of it. Then he put it on television. I said, what? So I dropped out of the scene and found a small church that I would attend.
Yeah.
And one day, and I was ashamed of the story, they asked me to come up and tell the story, and I got up and gave my testimony.
Yeah.
Then I gave it again. And then after a year or so, I was ordained an evangelist so I could go into prisons, mm-hmm. hospitals, mm-hmm. and talk to kids. And it just took over my life.
Wow.
Then in the early 80s, well, the first of 1980, I became a pastor at my own church.
In Houston.
Yeah. Never intended to be in religion. I never intended.
Right.
I just wanted to go home and hide from what had happened to me in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. And again, it really is about talking about Jesus Christ and not talking about religion or a church. Would you agree?
You, because I didn't know, but no, I started screaming, Jesus Christ is coming alive in
That's right.
me. And so I had to tell everybody about that. And before you know it, I'm just all over the world telling people about how important it was. There is a Jesus Christ.
That's right.
And that's been my story more than anything else. That's the most important thing, is to tell that story about the greatness of God giving us this Jesus Christ.
Oh, good, good words. Good words. Tell me about your newest book. You truly do have a million-dollar smile. Now, I think you've made more than a million with it. But Going the Extra Mile, tell me about that.
Well, and I try to tell all my children all the time, you know, you may never be the most fast athlete, mm-hmm. The tallest athlete or whatever, or the best student. But you can always be the nicest human being someone has met that day.
Yeah.
And you do it with a smile. If something is bothering with you, if you're down, you're out, you've lost everything, you can still smile about it.
That's right.
You can, and then there's always tomorrow. You can smile about tomorrow.
That's right.
And that's why this book, that smile has been able to bring me through. I've lost everything. When I left boxing, to wake up one morning to be a rich man one day, and then fractions from being a homeless person.
Yeah.
And I decided I'm going to smile about it. Because I didn't want people to meet a man who called himself, who said he met Jesus Christ, and he's sad. Hmm. What greater wealth could someone have than the knowledge of God?
Is your faith more important when you're hitting rock bottom or gone through a divorce or you know, going through some of the trials that literally all of us go through?
Oh, that's when it is. When adversity has got to be there.
Yeah.
Anyone can laugh through the good times, but who can smile through the rough times?
Yeah.
And that's what my faith has been able to bring me through. Knowing that God was there, he'll always be there. If he can pull me out of nothingness and death, he can sure put a smile on my face. And yeah. I claim it by faith. I just smile.
You know, just take a couple minutes. What would you say, and I know you speak to a lot of youth groups and churches, but just turn to that camera. What would you counsel people or say to people that are facing some of the things you have faced, true adversity in their life?
Yeah, and I always try to tell people that life is different in one way. It's most different than death. Hmm. When you're dead, there's nothing that I can tell you about. But when you're alive, you got something to cheer about.
That's right.
If you're gonna be living, you're gonna face adversity. That's why they call it life. Bills, divorce, heartaches, all of these come only to those who are alive. And I celebrate my life by saying, bring it on.
Amen. Amen.
Bring it on. I mean, and I'm going to smile about it, because I was in the ring a couple of times, and I remember being knocked down by this Ron Lyle. Mm-hmm. He hit me so hard, knocked me down to the canvas. I was staggering. I went back to my corner, and Gil Clancy said, George, do you really want it? Mm. Want it? I said, I had a million. I've already been champion of the world. What do you mean, do I really want it? And I found out later on, do I really want to look in the mirror and say, you know what, I fought. I brushed my pants off. I got off the canvas, spit in my palms and say, I can go another round.
Yeah.
And we can all go another round if we just embrace God and learn about Jesus Christ. It was all about what they were telling me about, one day you're going to have it made. I was going to have faith. That's what I got.
You know, a lot of people think that, okay, you become a Christian and life is all of a sudden going to become perfect and you're going to have no problems. But in many cases, it could be just the opposite. You know, that the devil's going to fight you even harder now.
Oh,
and tell me about that a little bit.
As a matter of fact, there wasn't a devil until I found God.
That's right. That's right.
That's when the wrestle started. But I remember reading a book one time in church, a little verse that said, I have been young and now am old, but I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed beg bread. Mm-hmm. And one day I'd lost every dime I had. I was broke. And I just walked down the street crying, as a matter of fact, and saying, God, I'm going to preach this sermon, and nothing's going to ever stop me from telling this story about what God does for the ones who are faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I've never looked back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything has worked out just fine. But I had never seen, it was as a man growing up, a man embracing religion, that I found bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I found everything that's supposed to be rough once I found religion.
You know, I'm reading through the book here, and again, George's newest book is called Going the Extra Smile, Discover the Life-Changing Power of a Positive Outlook. And again, I don't know that there's any athlete that I've ever seen a greater turnaround, again, in the early days, seeing the hate and just, you know, the troubled soul came out of you, and now you just beam and you just exude Jesus Christ. I see it in your eyes. I see it in your face. And you're taking that attitude now even into the business world. I mean, tell me about selling this little thing called the George Foreman Grill. That is amazing to me.
Because so many people thought, oh, they called it a griller. They called it all kind of names.
Yeah.
But I took on this, I was doing really good on Madison Avenue doing commercials, and then one friend challenged me, as they did with boxing, why don't you get your own product? I said, how much are you going to pay me? No, we're not going to give you money. We just want you to go out there and put your name on it and promote it. Mm-hmm. And by faith, my wife chose, you know what, George, it really does work. And